One day a young man showed up in the forest where the lumberjacks were working, and he went up to the foreman of the lumberjack crew and he said, "I'd like to join your crew." And the foreman said, "Well, what experience do you have at chopping down trees?" And the young man said, "None, but I can work hard." He said, "Well, let's see," and handed him an axe. He said, "See that tree over there? Let's see what it takes you to fell that tree." So he began to pound away on that tree, and before long the tree fell. He said, "I think this young man can make something of himself." And so he said, "You start Monday." Monday morning came along, the young man worked hard. Tuesday morning came along, the young man worked hard. Wednesday, the man worked hard. On Thursday afternoon, the foreman came up to the young man and said, "Listen, you can pick up your check this afternoon as you leave." And the young lumberjack said, "Now wait a minute, I thought that I was doing good. I come in before everyone else does. I stay after everyone else leaves. I work through all my coffee breaks. I'm working just fine." To which the foreman said, "Well, you know, on Monday you started out and you were the first. You cut down more trees than anybody. But by Tuesday you declined, and by Wednesday you were number 8th in the pack, and I just see this pattern of laziness in your work." Well, the young man protested and he said, "Listen, I'm doing all my part. I'm working just as hard today as I was on Monday." The foreman started to scratch his head because he couldn't figure it out. And then he looked at the young man and he said, "Let me see your axe." He pulled his axe out and looked at it. He said, "How often do you sharpen your axe?" To which the young man replied, "Sharpen?" You see, he was working with the same fury, but with a very dull tool. And the reality is that every one of us put effort into our work. Every one of us are out there at least investing some time and energy in our job, in our work. But oftentimes, we're not very effective in what we do. And what we do in our work is very important to God. Listen to these words from Paul in Colossians chapter 3. He says, "Whatever you do, work at it with all your heart as working for the Lord, not for men, since you know that you will receive an inheritance from the Lord as a reward. It is the Lord Christ you are serving." So if we're truly serving Christ with our work, shouldn't our work reflect something good? Well, last week we looked at work from the book of Proverbs, and we looked at three attitudes to avoid. The first one was the attitude of laziness, or the approach of laziness. That's the no-work approach to life. And then we looked at the whole issue of greed. That's the all-work approach to life. And then we looked at dishonesty, and that's the low-work approach. Well, today we're going to move to the positive, and we're going to focus on the diligent, that is, the good work person. And in the book of Proverbs, we see that the diligent person, the characteristics of diligence are the one that is are the characteristics that are praised. Now, let me define diligent for you. When you take the word diligent and you look at what it means, the word came from a root word in the Proverbs or in the Old Testament, which means to be sharp, to be precise. It's referring to a person who is actually a tool that cuts well. Someone who is decisive, someone who works hard, someone who is sharp, someone who is on top of things, someone who puts time and energy into what they're doing. In fact, I believe that the best way to define the diligent person is someone who plans his work and works his plan. Now let me show you how that works. In Proverbs chapter 21, verse 5, and I'm going to put these up on the screen so you can follow along. Look at what the diligent person does. It says, "The plans of the diligent lead to profit, as surely as haste leads to poverty." The diligent person is the one who actually, before they set out on a course of work to do their job or anything in life, they sit down and they think through what they're trying to do. They're not haphazard. They've got a plan in mind. They're looking at what is the best I can do, what's the best course of action, and they plan it out. In opposition to that, or the opposite, is to just be hasty, to get up in the morning and rush through your day. You know, everybody who does time management seminars, what do they tell you to do in your day? In the first 15 minutes are to do what? Sit down and look at your goals, your priorities. Spend some time planning your day. You will do well to have thought through how you're going to approach this day. That's why we challenge people to have a quiet time. to get up in the morning and spend some time really praying and asking God, God, what do you want me to do with this day? I'll guarantee you that the distractions of life are great enough that if you don't think through what you're going to do and how you're going to respond to what takes place in your day, you're not going to be effective in your job. And so the diligent person actually makes a plan, but he not only makes a plan, he actually works his plan. Let me show you three Proverbs. In 12:11, it says, "He who works his land will have abundant food, but he who chases fantasy lacks judgment." Now, I want you to notice, as you look at this proverb carefully, it says, "He who works his land." In other words, he who is willing to focus on what's been given to him, his job, his property, he's the one that's going to come out ahead. Now, the person who's always looking at someone else's land, always looking at someone else's job, always looking at how they can get ahead, the person who, while they're supposedly giving their employer 8 hours of quality work, is on the telephone networking for the best business deal that they're going to do tomorrow, or the new job that they're going to pick up the next day, constantly chasing a fantasy and not dealing with what is in front of you, that person's not going to be a diligent person. A diligent person is the one who actually takes the plan and then works it. Look at the second verse I put up there. In Proverbs 14:23, it says, "All hard work brings a profit, but mere talk leads only to poverty." Isn't that good? At some point in time, you got to work. You got to put some effort into it. You got to sweat a little bit. Everybody can sit around and talk about how things ought to be, or make plans about how we should do things. You know, one of the things I've seen over time is that everybody wants to rewrite and redesign and recreate. You ever notice that? You hire a person into a position, what do they want to do? They want to sit down and rewrite it. That's just talk. Sooner or later, somebody's got to do something. And a diligent person, once they figure out what needs to do, they plan their work, then they get busy and they work their plan. Look at the third proverb up here. Proverbs 10, verse 4 says, "Lazy hands make a man poor, but diligent hands bring wealth." If you work hard, you get ahead. If you wonder why you're not going anywhere financially, it may be because you're not working hard. You've got to put out some effort. And you may not have the highest IQ in the world, but you know what? Managers, bosses, employers, they appreciate someone who will do it and do it with effort. And you'll get ahead. You'll move forward. Now, there are a few exceptions to the Proverbs. Every once in a while, you'll see someone who makes some kind of fantasy plan and doesn't work real hard and all things fall into place. And somehow, by some stretch of luck, they end up being well off financially. And then they usually write a book about it, and hundreds and hundreds of poor saps try to do it the same way and spend the rest of their life in misery thinking, you know, well, so-and-so did it. I ought to be able to do it his way. You know, I often wonder on those infomercials. You know, if you made so much money doing things the way you say you did it in such simple, easy way, why in the world are you doing this infomercial and writing books that you're trying to sell to me? You know, why not just keep doing what you're doing? Maybe it's in the sale of the books where the real profit is to people who don't really want to work. They want to find a way to get around that. A diligent person is someone who's decisive, someone who thinks through what they're going to do, and then they are tireless in putting effort into doing their job and doing it well. Now, that's the characteristic of a diligent person. However, as I say this, I also want to point out to you that you can be a diligent person and in the process of that, not get ahead, not do well with your life, not do well with your job, not do well with your finances. And there are some reasons, and the Proverbs give those reasons, and I'm going to give you actually 5 of them this morning that you need to keep in mind and put in the back of your mind that as you are a diligent person working hard with your life, there are some things that you need to factor in. Basically, there are additional words to the worker, and let me share those with you. The first one is this. Number one, address long-term security before short-term comfort. As a worker, as a diligent person, address long-term security before short-term comfort. Now look at this verse. This verse is pure wisdom. He says, finish your outdoor work and get your fields ready. After that, build your house. Now why? Why would he say that? You know, the tendency would be, you know, we're moved into a new place. We're plowing a new piece of property. We're going to homestead a new area. What do we need to do? What do we need to do? Well, let's get our house in order first. Let's build a place to live. And the writer of Proverbs says, do exactly the opposite. The first thing you do is you plow and plant your field. Why? Because when harvest time comes, you will have missed the opportunity if you don't make sure you're working on long-term issues. You can be nice and snug as a bug in a rug, sitting in your warm house and starving to death if you haven't taken care of your long-term security issues. Now, I want to show you the wisdom that's contained in this verse. Let me give you some practical examples. First one is this. If at age 25 you decide that you're going to purchase a couch and spend $1,000 on it, because you need nice furniture in your home. I mean, you got your new home, you need to move in, set up a nice couch. So you're going to spend $1,000. At age 65, how much do you think that couch will have cost you? Answer, cost? $53,000. You say, now how in the world can that be? Because if you'd have taken that couch at age 25 and not purchased it, you know, drive up and down the neighborhood and people are throwing theirs in the trash, you pick one of those up, put it in your house, you know, get some fabric, recover it or whatever. If you would have taken that $1,000 and you would have invested it in an IRA, 10% interest, for 40 years, you know how much it'd be worth? $53,000. You see what the Proverbs are saying? Take care of your long-term security first before you worry about building your house. Let me give you a second example. Suppose that at age 25 you decide that you deserve to drive a nicer automobile, and so you add $100 a month to your payment on your car. In other words, you upgrade from, you know, one type of car to another, from a $199 a month payment to a $299 a month payment, or from a $399 to a $499, and you do that from age 25 to age 65. You always have a nicer automobile, $100 a month. You know how much that will cost you by the time you're 65? $632,000 to drive a nicer car. Is it worth it? The problem is that at age 65, you can't get that back. You know what $100 a month is worth at age 65? It's worth $100 a month. I'll give you one more example. You decide, you know, I don't want to make a lunch. Spend $1 a day making my own lunch. I'll just buy lunch out every day. Spend $5 a day eating out. In 10 years, how much will you have spent? $16,324 just to not have to get up in the morning and make your sandwich, but to drive down to Burger King or McDonald's and eat lunch. Now, if you're in the fast food business, I'm not trying to undermine your business. I'm just trying to show you the pure wisdom of this. People in their 20s and 30s ought not be living in the same kind of house that their moms and dads lived in. People in their 20s and 30s ought not be driving the nicest car they can afford. People in their 20s and 30s should understand that that is the best time to make long-term investments, to save for retirement, to save for your kids' college fund. That's not the time to live high on the hog. That's the time to really put your money in long-term investments. And then when you're in your 50s, when you're in your 60s, you're not going to be sweating, wondering, how in the world am I going to take care of my future? Plant your field first, and then build your house. It's amazing to me to see the number of young people that the first priority on their mind after they get married is to try to buy a house and buy the nicest one they can find. The nicest one they can afford. Think that through. You'll save yourself an enormous amount of pain. Well, let me also remind you that I'm aware of an investment that will pay 30, 60, or 100% per year for the rest of your life. You want in on that investment? You know what it is? It's investing financially in the kingdom of Jesus Christ. You see, that pays beyond retirement. And there are a lot of people who don't invest financially in the kingdom of Jesus Christ because what little they have left over after they bought their house, they're trying to scrape together to put in to some kind of retirement. Missing the whole point. Invest wisely in your long-term life, both here on this earth and in the kingdom to come, and you'll end up so much further ahead down the road. Second principle, how you treat people will matter in the end. In your business dealings, in your work, how you treat people will matter in the end. Listen to this proverb. Proverbs 12:10 says, a righteous man cares for the needs of his animal, but the kindest act of the wicked are cruel. A righteous man even takes care of his beast of burden, his oxen that are plowing his field, or his donkey that's pulling his wagon. He cares about people. He cares about even the lowest thing. Listen to the second one. Verse 27:18 says, he who tends a fig tree will eat its fruit, and he who looks after his master will be honored. You want job security? Take care of your job. Do a good job at what you do. You want job security? Respect your boss. Take care of your boss. If you're the kind of person who constantly is undermining your relationship with people to get things done, you don't care about the person under you, you don't care about the person over you, you don't care about the person beside you, all you're caring about is getting ahead, you will find out in the end that people really matter. And ultimately, if in the process of that you forget about your spouse, you forget about your kids, you forget about friendships, you will find in the end that people truly matter. Third additional word to the worker is, if you can't handle what you have, stop acquiring more. If you can't handle what you already have, stop acquiring more. Listen to this proverb. Proverbs 12:27 says, the lazy man does not roast his game, but the diligent man prizes his possessions. The lazy man is a person who, he acquires something and he gets his game, he goes out, does his hunting, brings home the food, but he can't even get himself motivated enough to cook it. It's just nothing's important to him. But the diligent man is the one who works hard to acquire those things that are important, and then he manages them and takes care of them. We live in a disposable, throwaway culture. The garage sales on the streets of this town are selling stuff that's good. Why do we sell it in a garage sale? Because we acquire more than we need. And if you've got something that's perfectly good, and you're a diligent person and you're wanting to move forward and you're wanting to get ahead, hang on to it. Don't get rid of it, or don't acquire something else that displaces it. And then you say, well, I got to figure out what I'm going to do with this perfectly good stuff. I got too much to handle. Tom Johnson and I had a great experience in Central Asia here a couple months back when we were traveling around and interacting with people. And one of the things that we noticed is that most of the students wore the same clothes every day. They were clean. They washed them when they got dirty. But the wardrobe was not extensive. They basically wore the same thing each and every day. And Tom was saying, you know, I don't understand why these people wear the same clothes every day. They kind of look kind of like ragamuffins. That was his word. And I said, Tom, don't you realize that most of these people only have two changes of clothing? They have what they wear every day, and then they have what they wear when they dress up. That's all they have. And he said, well, I just don't understand that. I said, let's think about that for a second. What if everybody at Hill Country Bible Church, what if every one of us decided that we were only going to have one, two, three, four sets of clothing, and we were going to wear them until they wore out? Think about the pressure that would be released of having to get up and decide if what you were going to put on is in style, whether the other people who are going to see you are going to say, didn't he wear that outfit yesterday? And I know for some of you guys that work in the engineering field, what an incredible relief not to have to think, did he wear that yesterday? Because you probably did. And you don't really care. It works, right? Think of the resources that we could release into the kingdom if we didn't have closets and closets and closets full of clothing, and every week we're acquiring something else to the point where we even forget what's in there. If you can't keep up with all that you have, don't bother to acquire more. Now, why am I telling you this? Here's the reason why I'm telling you this. Because you can be diligent, you can be thoughtful, you can be hardworking, and you can be wondering, why am I not getting ahead? And the reason why you might not be getting ahead is because you're spending money redundantly on things because you've been told, spend, 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 spend. And so you're out there spending money on things that you don't need. And you're wondering, you know, why do I need this third car, this fourth car? Why do I need all these? You don't. If you can't keep up with what you got, don't acquire any more. Number four, debt is bondage. So borrow wisely or don't borrow at all. Debt is bondage, so borrow wisely or don't borrow at all. Look at 22:7. It says, the rich rule over the poor, and the borrower is the servant to the lender. This is very interesting. Throughout history, we've seen this in truth. You know, the rich have a tendency to be in the ruler. You know, you heard the golden rule, whoever has the gold rules. But the second part of this passage is significant because he says that the borrower is a servant, or literally a slave, to the lender. Now, there was a real true fulfillment of this in the Old Testament. If you borrowed money from somebody and then you couldn't pay it back, you know what happened to you? Your wife, your children, and you would be sold into slavery in order to pay the debt. In other words, there wasn't chapter 11 or chapter 13 or chapter 7 that erased all of that. You paid it back, and if you couldn't pay it back, you literally paid it back with your life. And so for a person to go into debt was a very risky thing because it could literally cost you everything. And this passage applied today is simply this. If you're a person who's borrowed money and you can't make your payments, you can't keep up with a note, you literally now have placed yourself in bondage to the people that you've borrowed money from. But there's also a subtle concept, and that is, what happens when you find yourself worried? How am I going to pay back my credit? Isn't that a form of slavery? Isn't there a little piece of you that you've given up, that you've lost? How about when you go take that second job? Because your debts have accumulated and I got to pay this back. Or how about when you can't pay it back and you file bankruptcy and you live under this cloud of guilt? Because you know that there were good working, loving, hard working people out there that expected payment for their services and you're not going to be able to pay them back, and so now they've got to deal with their creditors, and that's going to have a negative impact on their life. And just as you went through all of that pain and emotional stress and finally got to a point where you needed to file bankruptcy and you did that, don't you think that the people who you owed money to now feel that same stress, that same pain, that same frustration in their life? You know what all that is? That's bondage. And why do we go into debt? Well, usually there are two reasons. Number one, we go into debt because we have an opportunity to be able to do something financially, for example, start a business or buy a home or make some kind of a long-term investment, and we look at it and we see that the debt is going to be very workable. We're actually going to put our money into something that will appreciate or something that has value. Or we go into debt because there's something that we really want, we don't have the money for it, and we can't wait until we've saved the money, so we're going to go out and get it now and pay extra for it and worry about it later. Now, that's the second kind of debt, that consumer debt. That's something that we have to really very wisely take a look at. Some of us are living in bondage. I love the fact that we've had a number of people who left their place of employment and took a big cut in pay to come on staff for Hill Country Bible Church. And you know what every one of those guys did? The reason why they could do that is because they weren't carrying a big debt. If they would have had a big debt, there's no way that they could take a cut in pay to do that. What if tomorrow your boss asked you to do something that you felt like was immoral, and you decided that you needed to quit, you just couldn't stay there, you couldn't do that? For many of us, with a huge financial debt, not knowing how we're going to make these payments, You'd say, I would be tempted to compromise my principles because what am I going to do? That is a very risky thing. And you can be a diligent person. You work hard. You put time and energy in, and you wonder why you're not getting ahead. And the reason why you're not getting ahead is because you're paying a premium for everything because you're borrowing so much money. The concept of contentment is a powerful thing. Being satisfied that what God has given me today is what He wants me to have, and I'll live on that. And I'm not going to borrow money for other little things that I think will make me happy. Number 5, celebrate your skills, and those who matter will notice. Celebrate your skills, and those who matter will notice. 22:29 says, "Do you see a man skilled in his work? He will serve before kings. He will not serve before obscure men." It's interesting that oftentimes those people who've made it to the top are not so impressed with themselves. And they see someone who's really good at something, and they take notice. A skilled craftsman, that's the person that the king has to bring in to make himself look good. He needs a skilled craftsman to make his throne look good. He needs a skilled craftsman to make his palace look good. And people at the top of high-tech companies, you know who they really appreciate? They appreciate the guy that's incredibly gifted at making their company successful. Here's the difficulty. Many of us are more concerned about what our peers think. And so what we do is we tend to look at the skills that God has given us, and rather than celebrating those, even if taking those skills and using those may mean a lower social position, we don't want to do that. Now listen, if you've been gifted with your hands, but you're working in a job where you have to use your head, and it's absolutely killing you, and every day you're frustrated, and it's taken all of your life out of you, what I'm suggesting to you is maybe you need to celebrate working with your hands, be willing to readjust your lifestyle in order to live in a different standard of living in order to be able to do what God has really gifted you to do. And if you're really good at working with your hands and you've felt your whole life that you're inferior because you're not doing something that pays a lot of money, let me tell you, you're not inferior. Whatever you do that's good, whatever gifting you have, whether it's working with your hands, whether it's working with your head, whether it's working with people, whether it's working with creativity or whether it's crunching numbers, whatever God has gifted you to do, celebrate that. Be satisfied with it. Don't always look to do something that the people around you say is really important. Because in the end, those people who really matter will see what you do and they will appreciate you for the way God has gifted you. I was very pleased to hear this week that one of our elders got what I consider a very big recommendation. Some of you know Pete Craycroft. He served on our elder board. Now he's finished a term and he's serving one more year. And Pete Craycroft is a teacher. Pete loves kids. He loves students. And he didn't follow his father into architecture, which he very well could have. He didn't follow many others into other careers that pay more. He decided that because he's good at working with students that he would be a teacher. And he teaches high school journalism and he coaches at Lanier High School. And this year, Pete Craycroft was voted the Teacher of the Year at Lanier High School. And I think that's a big deal. I've known Pete for a long time and I'm very confident that he could make twice as much money doing something else and be totally miserable and not be making the contribution that he's making. And I'm so proud of people who say, you know what? God created me this way. This is what I'm good at. This is what I do well. This is my passion. And I'm not going to worry about taking a job that moves me up to the top, so to speak. I'm just going to celebrate my skill. I'm going to do what I do well. I'm going to let the chips fall where they may. I'm going to live within my income. I'm going to work hard. And you know what will happen? The people who matter will notice. I just happen to believe that there are several hundred students at Lanier High School that matter more than the people who live in the nicer neighborhoods of Austin and wonder why Pete isn't making more money. I just think they matter more. Do you think they matter more? Those people who matter will notice. You can work really hard. You can be diligent, but if you're doing something that God hasn't skilled you to do, and you wonder why you're not going anywhere, you're not getting ahead, you're frustrated with life, the word to you is celebrate what you're good at. Do that, and you'll find satisfaction in life. Diligence works. It'll pay huge dividends, both in your character, in your relationships, in your walk with God, and ultimately in your career. Let's bow our heads for prayer. Father in heaven, we just want to tell you that we thank you for giving us the ability to do something that makes a difference. We thank you that you are the kind of God who has not just put us here in the world, but you've put us here with a purpose. So Father, we just come before you. We want you to know that we offer ourselves to you to be diligent people. Those who are on the top, praise you for them. Those who are in the middle, praise you for them. Those who feel like they're on the bottom in this world's eyes, Father, I praise you for them too. Give them eyes to see how much you love them and how valuable they are for you. We pray these things in Jesus' name. Amen.